Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this 29th of August, Wednesday morning, the day after Ann Romney and Chris Christie's and Scott Walker's address to the Republican National Convention. We have two wonderful guests this hour to talk about Ann Romney's address. We'll mention Chris Christie briefly, but it was her night last night. She had the task of humanizing her husband and also, as one of our guests points out, needs to help with a gender divide between Republicans and Democrats. Did she do that last night? We'll begin our program with Peter Canellos. He's editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, named to that position in 2009. He's the former Washington bureau chief, and he has authored the National Perspective column since 2003. He's a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia Law School, and he wrote a recent piece yesterday about Chris Christie's role and Ann Romney's role, and we'll be interested to find out what he thought of their speeches last night. You may recall that we did a show recently with two of the authors of The Real Romney from the Boston Globe, and they have been following Mitt Romney for many, many years, and it's really a valuable book. So just use that for reference as we continue with this campaign season. Later this hour, we will be speaking with an associate professor of communication studies at Colorado State University. She listened to Ann Romney's speech very carefully. She's done a great deal of work in the area of women in politics and has studied First Lady's rhetoric, and she will talk about the parts of the speech that she found noteworthy and whether or not it was a successful address. Here's our phone number. We're particularly interested in hearing what you thought about last night's event. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to use that, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Peter. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
You mentioned in a long piece, that Ann Romney needs to help with a gender divide. A lot of her speech was talking directly to women and uplifting women and saying that women actually worked harder than men work. It seemed somewhat calculated to address that gender divide. Was it successful in that regard?
Well, I think it was very successful among certain women. Obviously, professional women's concerns tend to direct them to the Democratic Party. The women that the Republican Party is trying to appeal to, obviously they're trying to appeal to all women, but I think that there's probably a group of generally older women in the Ann Romney demographic, not as wealthy as Ann Romney, but wives and mothers and grandmothers, who find the Republican Party perhaps a little bit harsh. They may have been turned off during the primary election. They don't know what to make of Mitt Romney. The whole business career thing bothers them a little bit. So, you know, she was out there to say, we, the Romneys, understand what women, you know, struggling with families, struggling to make ends meet, what those women understand. And you could pretty much see it in you know, every line of her speech.
Mm-hmm. Her other big task last night was to make her husband seem more human. Was she successful in that regard?
I think she was successful in sort of providing a context for people to look at him, particularly when she talked about how he doesn't talk about his good works because he sees it as a privilege to be able to do them. She also said that, you know, they have been successful and he has been successful, and it bothers her that people are criticizing his success, but that, you know, she was there when he was struggling and working hard and burning the midnight oil to try to make it, and, you know, she provided sort of a wife's eye view of Mitt Romney and therefore, you know, gave him more human dimension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did get married. They met each other. I read the book that the Boston Globe reporters had worked on. It's really an excellent look at the family and the history of the Romneys. They were very, very young when they met and got married at a very young age. It's remarkable they've been together for so long, haven't they?
Yeah, they absolutely have been together for so long, and I will say that the somewhat unusual circumstances surrounding their courtship and engagement, which were they really had met at a dance at the private school Cranbrook that Mitt Romney had gone to, and there was a woman's school that was affiliated with it, and she was a couple of years younger. He was a senior. It was a very kind of chaste early 1960s kind of environment, but Mitt and Anne kind of, the story is that they fell in love at first sight, but almost immediately afterwards, Mitt Romney went off to France to do his missionary work. And during that time, Mitt Romney's parents, pretty much persuaded Anne to even move in with them and come to understand the family religion of Mormonism. She was not Mormon. And her parents agreed, and she agreed, and she did that. And then when he returned from France, it was almost like a surprise for Mitt was that, Anne was there waiting for him and had developed this long relationship with his family. I mean, I'm sure there had been some letters back and forth and things, but, it pretty much sealed the deal. And from then on, they married when they were in college and went on to have the five sons. But a little bit because of that, I think that people have viewed Anne Romney as being kind of a very traditional wife, a person who was very shy in the public spotlight, an unusually quiet woman, confined to the role of wife and mother. And she's really blossomed on the campaign trail, and you could see her intelligence, particularly her political intelligence in that speech, and also her talent as a speaker, which I think exceeds a lot of campaign wives that we've seen. So, it's been a real kind of coming of age and warming to the spotlight experience for Anne Romney in this 2012 campaign.
Did she not warm to the spotlight when she was First Lady of Massachusetts?
No, she was quite shy.
Was she?
I think what happened is when he was running for governor, she made a couple of comments that seemed a little bit sort of off key. For example, there's a largely black neighborhood in Boston called Roxbury, and then there's a totally separate neighborhood that's largely white called West Roxbury. And she said at one point, she was saying things like, oh, there's some very nice parts of Roxbury. I particularly like West Roxbury, which, they're different communities, but she didn't know that. And it came off as being a little bit, sort of a suburban woman not understanding the geography and perhaps the racial, dynamics of the inner city. And she was criticized for those kinds of remarks, and it came off like she was sort of clueless. And I think that caused her to take about six steps backward and, very much just confine her role to supporting her husband.
Here is some of what she said last night, just brief comments that where she was mentioning a storybook marriage, and maybe it wasn't just a storybook marriage, that she has had some significant health issues to deal with.
I read somewhere that Mitt and I have a storybook marriage. Well, let me tell you something. In the storybooks I read, there never were long, long rainy winter afternoons in a house with five boys screaming at once. And those storybooks never seem to have chapters called MS or breast cancer. A storybook marriage? Nope, not at all. What Mitt Romney and I have is a real marriage.
Let's talk about those health issues that she has faced. Has she talked extensively about those?
She has. I think that she has more about MS than about her breast cancer experience.
Yes.
But I think that passage there was also an example of her really going out of her way to sort of humanize the Romneys. I mean, that storybook marriage, the great wealth, the perfect looks, the fact that his father and mother were so prominent, such prominent people, leads to the idea that, he has led this unbelievably charmed life. And part of her agenda was to say, look, we did great through all this hard work, but it wasn't charmed. It was something that we had to really contend with every day and work on. And, we do understand what average families are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. I think that was her message there. Now, about her health problems, she has talked about her multiple sclerosis, and she many times talks about how supportive her husband was, and how she had gone through a period of sort of despair where she felt like after the diagnosis it would be sort of a quick spiral downwards and that her life was effectively over, and he totally disagreed and told her to just live her life to the fullest and not pay attention to the MS, and that was great advice. And her breast cancer experience was more recent, and I think it was caught early and treated very quickly, so it didn't play out as much of a drama, as her MS has. But you know, her point is how rock solid supportive her husband was during those crises, and how much she relies on him. And I think that's something that a lot of women appreciate and will probably, you know, think better of Mitt Romney for being a very loyal spouse when the chips were down.
Mm-hmm. I thought that her statement at the end, when she was talking about this is a man who hasn't failed, was particularly effective, because when you look at how he, if you're going to concentrate on his success, he's been very successful in the business world, successful as a governor, successful with the Olympics. I can almost see that as a theme that will come through the campaign. This is a man that doesn't fail.
I think that's right, and I think it also felt genuine. I mean, there's so much being said about Mitt Romney that doesn't completely connect to his persona and his character. You know, when people talk about, you know, social issues and the importance of Romney standing up for life, it doesn't. You don't really see that in his presentation so much. Or, you know, when people talk about what a great, you know,
oh dear. God. Yeah, we're having problems with your phone here, so let's try and rectify that situation. I don't know what happened. It's just, you can't hear what he's saying. We're talking about Ann Romney's address to the Republican National Convention, an important speech for her, and we're getting analysis of that speech. We have two guests with us this hour, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can also leave messages on our Facebook page. I know many of you are political junkies, as we are, and watch the entirety of the National Convention Republican, and we'll watch the Democrats next week. So you may want to comment on other things that you heard during last night's address. So we will try and reconnect with our guest, who is editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. And the Globe has done terrific work, and he's written extensively about the Romneys, because Governor Romney was governor of Massachusetts. They followed him, and they also sent reporters all over the world for the past 10 years to really look at his Mormon faith, to look at the Olympics, to look at his time as governor, and have written a valuable book for those who are following this presidential campaign rather keenly. The book is The Real Romney. We're back with you. I can't remember exactly what sentence you were on, but carry on, sir.
The point was that I think the diligence comes through in Mitt Romney's presentation.
Yes.
I think people can see when she says that he's a man who never failed, they look at him and they see that intensity, they see that diligence, and they wouldn't mind seeing somebody like that tackle the nation's problems.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls and some comments from the audience. Let's start with Tina in La Crosse. Hi, Tina.
Hi, I saw the speech last night. I'm usually not interested in what wives, husbands, sons, daughters say about, I mean, if they don't like you, good grief. But she came across as the Stepford wife. She's very wealthy, very well groomed. I'm sure she studied very hard since her faux pas when she was the governor's wife. And unreal. I mean, she's had disease strikes rich or poor. But her life would be totally different if she got MS and she was a waitress or a sales associate at Walmart. I mean, she's just sort of poof. She wouldn't impress me. I mean, I'm not into Mrs. Obama either. There's been really great leaders and presidents that were really crappy spouses and husbands, simply because they were devoted to what they were doing. I don't really get where she's from or anything about her. She wouldn't impress me to vote for him or against him. It just, she's a wife.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but we do pay attention to the wives, certainly. What do you think about her criticism?
You're asking me?
Yes.
I think that that's obviously a reaction a lot of people have. I mean, the Romneys are extremely wealthy, you know, $20 million a year wealthy, and they've lived a very cloistered life, and Ann Romney has you know, a look and an air of somebody who's been, you know, well treated by life. And I think that, you know, she tried to address that, and the caller may not have been entirely persuaded, but probably before the speech the caller had the same ideas. And you know, if Ann Romney was able to persuade a certain percentage of those people who saw her only in terms of privilege, I think it was a successful speech.
Mm-hmm. She didn't spend a whole lot of time, and I want you to talk about this a little bit more. My understanding from reading the book is that she mentioned her father last night, that her father was not very religious at all, and yet he allowed George Romney, maybe because he was George Romney, to essentially bring her through a conversion process. I found that rather interesting, and she didn't talk a whole lot about the Mormon faith. Was that on purpose? Would it behoove her to talk more about that, just to humanize their faith as this campaign goes on?
I think they've made a decision not to really dwell on the Mormon faith and the Mormonism, just because it is a point of alienation for some people. There are some evangelical Christians who have deep suspicions about Mormonism, and I think that they want to present the Romneys as just as people of faith, you know, people committed to their church, people committed to their religious community, people of deep beliefs. And I think that that was kind of marbled into her speech, but she never, came out and said, yes, I became a Mormon, or she says, he introduced me to his faith or his church or something like that. So I think it was deliberate, not dwelling on Mormonism as opposed to any other religion.
Mm-hmm. An email from Linda Ann Romney gave a nice, carefully scripted speech last night. However, what I will always remember is her unscripted real Ann Romney saying, "We've given you people all you need to know in reference to their taxes. The Romneys represent the rich elite, not the common people of this country."
I think that's a very, powerful critique of the Romneys, and it's something that people have seen in Ann Romney and feel towards Ann Romney. But it's not just the speech and this emailer said, in reference to the carefully scripted speech. I've seen her in person on the campaign trail, particularly in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, where you have small groups and small meetings. And also, she's very comfortable bantering with the press and things like that, but in a very human, down-to-earth way. And there were actually a number of instances where it was Mitt Romney who was sort of saying the off-key thing that kind of drew attention to their wealth and alienation, and it was Ann who kind of brought him down to earth. And even in Massachusetts, when he was the governor, there were some people, who would cite specific instances where, she would sort of remind him of his manners in certain ways. And so I think that it's more than just a scripted speech. I think that she has come into herself, and I think she's able to show a more human side than she did when he first entered politics.
Pat in Richland. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, good morning. Comment and then a question. The comment is, Romney seemed like the epitome of the richest 1%, and the way he made all his money was very indicative of what's wrong with this economy. So if the Democrats can't beat this guy, I don't know. The Democrats aren't, they'd have nothing to brag about then. But my question is this. The only thing I heard about her speech was she said, "This man will not lose." Now, I'd like your guest to comment. Now, a statement like that, does that say more like they're more interested in themselves or what they can do for the country?
I thought she said he will not fail.
Yeah, she said he will not fail.
Either way. I mean, come on, man. This guy, it's about him, Kathleen.
Well, I would say that when she said he will not fail, what she means is in taking on the economic challenges and the national security challenges of the country, he won't fail because he's just going to work so hard at it. And she is trying to make a connection to his business career. And I think the caller does make a good point that, she's trying to present this business career as just an example of success. It's just perfect success. Everybody would, if everyone worked as hard as Mitt Romney, they would have had the same success. And I think that people like the caller would say, this type of investment, private equity, has a lot of social costs to it that a lot of people find uncomfortable, and that, Romney's success was not the kind of success that everybody, wants to share in. So that, that's an argument for the Democrats to make, but it certainly is an argument that's out there.
There may be a huge difference here between how Democrats are viewing her and Mitt Romney and how Republicans are. You look at people like the Kennedys, who also had enormous wealth and some could say would have been out of touch with the average person because they didn't have regular kinds of jobs growing up, etc. And yet people seem to embrace that. It's okay. There's something about great wealth and maybe think we're going to get it or We kind of like our own form of royalty in this country. Am I onto something, or am I off base with it?
Well, no, I just think that Mitt Romney doesn't fit either of those categories, because he'll sort of embrace people of wealth, but only if they're like princely heirs, like the Kennedys and Bushes and Roosevelts, you know, who grew up not having to worry about money and then could concentrate on public service in a certain way. Or we gravitate towards people like Barack Obama or Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton, you know, who are totally self-made in politics, grew up poor, had terrible disadvantages in some cases. Mitt Romney kind of is in a different category. You know, he did have a prominent family and prominent father and mother, but he also made all of his money on his own, and he made it, you know, in the business world at a time when you know, the ethics and procedures and regulations of the business world are a major public issue. So, you know, Romney's background is more germane to this campaign than the backgrounds of any of the previous presidents we talked about.
Thanks, Pat, for your call. Nancy in Milwaukee, hi.
Hello. I enjoyed her speech, but it was obviously fashion to entice the greater number of American women to vote for her husband. I thought it was very interesting that I do believe it was very interesting to think about the fact that when the elder Romneys took her into their home while Mitt was in France, I do believe it was to keep her pure for their son. They had determined, evidently the elder Romneys had determined, that this was the woman that he loved, and they approved of her, and so by goddamn, they were going to keep her pure. And I also wondered about the fact that Romney would even enter into this race for the presidency when his wife has MS, because it's my understanding that being subjected to stress is one of the worst things that an MS patient undergoes, that exacerbates the problem and brings on additional symptoms rather rapidly.
Peter.
Yeah, I have two interesting reactions to that, I think, or two things to add particularly to that. The first one is I don't think it was entirely to keep her pure. I think that what they felt was that the religion would be an obstacle, that they really wanted Mitt to marry a Mormon woman, and that, you know, if this was the woman that he loved, you know, they wanted to introduce her to Mormonism and teach her, you know, the Mormon faith. So I think that was probably a predominant motivation of the elder Romneys. The second one about MS is interesting, because when he ran for governor in Massachusetts in 2002 and had just come back from running the Olympics, Ann Romney made a comment saying that she had mixed feelings about going back to Massachusetts because her MS was so much better in Utah. And immediately people were like, well, wait a minute, what is he sacrificing her health to come for his politics? And, she quickly backtracked and said that she was feeling great. And, you know, then she talked again about how supportive he'd been and how he'd bought her horses and things like this to help with her MS and her balance. But the issue of whether the stress of a campaign could affect her MS has been mentioned around the edges. And, you know, she says she feels good and she seems very comfortable now in the spotlight. So it doesn't seem like it's a big deal.
Peter, thank you so much. Thanks for all your invaluable reporting, too. It's great to talk to people who have this breadth of knowledge and long history of covering the Romneys. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Kathleen.
Peter Canellos from the Boston Globe, where he is editor of the editorial page. Boston Globe has done terrific work covering the Romneys for many, many years now. We, this hour, are talking about Ann Romney because she addressed the Republican National Convention last night. Our next guest says she was largely successful, but the speech was safe, familiar, and conformed to our expectations that we have of a potential first lady. It'll be interesting to talk more about what those expectations are, and we will meet our next guest momentarily. And take more of your phone calls, too. Feel free to stay on the line here. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our next guest is Professor Karen Vasby Anderson, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University. Her research focuses on gender and U.S. political culture. She's the co-author of Governing Codes, Gender, Metaphor, and Political Identity, Woman President, Gendered Presidentiality, and Post-Feminist Political Culture. And she really is an expert on rhetoric of first ladies over the years. She watched the speech very carefully last night and says, and we'll play a little clip because I think this makes her point in some ways, that the speech was largely successful, but it conformed to our expectations that we have of a potential first lady. And we'll ask her if these comments make her point.
We walked to class together, shared the housekeeping, ate a lot of pasta and tuna fish. Our desk was a door propped up on sawhorses. Our dining room table was a fold-down ironing board in the kitchen. But those were the best days. Then our first son came along. All at once, I'm 22 years old with a baby and a husband who's going to business school and law school at the same time. And I can tell you, probably like every other girl who finds herself in a new life far from family and friends, with a new baby and a new husband, that it dawned on me that I had absolutely no idea what I was getting into.
Professor Karen Vasby Anderson is our guest to analyze the speech last night. Professor Anderson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be with you, Kathleen.
When you talk about conforming to our expectations, I thought that was an interesting part of her speech. I'm not sure if it rang true because they do come from a lot of money and everybody knows that, so it's hard to imagine the Romneys in that situation. But is that part of an expectation that we have for first ladies, that they, this idealized version, being together, being in love, not having much money, all of a sudden the children come, what am I into? My life is changed. I'm in love. It's romantic. That we embrace the vision that she gave us.
Absolutely. Your earlier caller mentioned that she wasn't particularly interested in what political spouses had to say because it's not directly germane on the policy stances of their husbands or wives. But one critical function that a presidential spouse in particular serves is to kind of attest to their husband's strength and masculinity and traditional sense of family. So as antiquated as it seems, we do expect the president and first spouse to stand in as an idealized version of the American family. That's actually why spouses of women presidential figures are problematic, because they remind us that gender roles are being reversed and that reversal threatens to destabilize kind of other cultural relationships. But one of the reasons that Ann Romney was successful last night is that she presented a reassuring picture of a cheerful, attractive, feminine, traditional spouse, and then that narrative was confirmed by the story that she told in the portion of her speech you just played.
Mm-hmm. I am struck, as I was reading last night some of the material that you have edited and that you have talked about, at the role of first ladies over the course of history. There really is there's an important role for all of them. Some of them have been extremely important in terms of not only being listening boards, but making sure that their husbands met the right people. I think that you have talked about John Quincy Adams' wife being given a list of people that she needed to talk to on a daily basis for political reasons, that a lot of first ladies have been highly political, even though we didn't know that they were being highly political. And some, like Hillary Clinton or Eleanor Roosevelt, have been very out front about all of that. Do we still struggle with how completely visible a first lady can be about how important these issues are to her?
You know, it really depends on both the mood of the nation at the time and the role that the president himself, and, you know, so hopefully someday will be herself, but so far the president himself wants his spouse to play. Some first ladies do a good job of tempering their husband's more formal style. Barbara Bush is a good example of somebody who, if she spoke kind of jovially and lovingly about George H.W. Bush and said that he had a good sense of humor, you know, we would take Barbara's word for it because we liked her and she was appealing. George W. Bush, in contrast, really was gregarious and outgoing and relatable, and so that enabled Laura Bush to not need to fulfill that role quite so much. But the one role that they all do have to fulfill is this notion of kind of performing traditional femininity. And now they don't all do that in the same way, and certainly since Hillary Clinton, there's been more ability for political spouses and presidential spouses to take on projects. Be very active. However, the most successfully well-received first ladies and presidential spouses are those that fit into our expectations as political women.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about romance for a moment. I found your comments interesting because I know you watched this speech very carefully. Romney's metaphor of Mitt guiding Americans safely home, just as he did that night after the dance, invoked, you said, another familiar metaphor used in coverage of political campaigns, and that is, da-da-da-da-da, the romance frame.
Absolutely. The media often frames political campaigns as contests in which candidates are positioned as suitors who court prospective voters, and voters are people who are encouraged to select their ideal candidate match. Now, this frame is not the best metaphor for campaigns because it emphasizes personal characteristics over policy stances, and we already have plenty of that in our politics. But the narrative, and the other thing that this narrative does is it encourages candidates to woo rather than to persuade prospective constituents. But this narrative is so familiar that it fit seamlessly into Ann Romney's speech last night. And again, it fed that notion that Mitt Romney is the strong, prototypical American presidential figure.
Right. You thought overall, it was said that she really had to make him a human being, that we had to figure out what he was like as a dad and as a spouse. Did she accomplish that last night? Did she, and it's a big task to humanize somebody, did she do that?
You know, according to at least the instant feedback that you saw last night on television and early in the blogs this morning, that suggests that she was successful. I know that the NPR, in its post-speech coverage immediately after the speech last night, ran a headline that said, Ann Romney delivers, she may have privilege, but she understands. And they, interestingly, Fox News reported that immediately after her speech, her Twitter political index, which is something new that Twitter is tracking in this election season, jumped to 83 points. It was a 34-point increase, which, according to that reporter, was the biggest increase in anybody's score I've ever seen. Chris Christie, actually, after his speech, he had a more modest 10-point bump in his Twitter political score. So I think that instantly she was successful, and particularly she was successful in that section of the speech where she tried to come across by saying, hey, women, I get it, I understand, even if my circumstance is a little bit different from yours, I can completely empathize with the struggles that you face on a day-to-day basis. Now, obviously, people who support the Romneys are going to be more predisposed to accepting that message than people who don't support their political positions or have concerns about them, you know, because of their wealth. But I think she did the best that she could possibly do to try to deliver the point that she needed to make last night.
You mentioned Chris Christie. I want to play a little bit of her theme, the overall theme of being about love. I found it very jarring when Chris Christie came up right after her address and starts talking about, it's not love, it's respect. It was such a contrast. Let's listen to it and then talk about it. I wonder if this was a good placement of their speakers, actually.
Tonight, I want to talk to you about love. I want to talk to you about the deep and abiding love I have for a man I met at a dance many years ago, and the profound love I have, and I know we share, for this country.
And the greatest lesson that Mom ever taught me, though, was this one. She told me there would be times in your life when you have to choose between being loved and being respected. Now, she said to always pick being respected. She told me that love without respect was always fleeting, but that respect could grow into real and lasting love. See, I believe we have become paralyzed by our desire to be loved.
What do you make of that? Were you jarred by that? It just seemed like he was trying to, in a way, counter what she was saying. It was strange to me.
I did. I found, as I was listening live to the speech, I found that to be one of the most jarring components of Chris Christie's speech. And, in fact, in some of the commentary after his speech, there was criticism of Christie for, you know, not deferring to Romney, to both Ann and Mitt Romney in his address, and making his speech more about himself than the candidate he was there to support. But I think that the contrast wouldn't have been quite as stark if the convention played out as it was supposed to, but because of the hurricane and because the first day of the convention got canceled, they had to put Ann Romney and Chris Christie on the same night.
Right.
And originally, Ann Romney was going to highlight or headline Monday night's convention coverage, and she was going to sort of top off what had been informally called Ladies' Night, and that night was going to be, you know, more about Mitt's human qualities and his appeal to women. Then Chris Christie was going to come the next night and punctuate the we built this night and have a more hard-hitting message. So I think that if the convention planners would have known that they were earlier, that they were going to be speaking back-to-back, they would have vetted the text of those two speeches more carefully in terms of how they would contrast with one another.
Let's play with those words for a moment, though, because I wonder, if you look at the role of First Ladies, I need to be loved, I need to be respected. Do both have to happen in order for the American people to really gather behind a first lady? Does she or he need both?
Does the first lady or does the spouse that she's supporting?
The first lady.
The key for first ladies is really to be likable. To be likable in a fairly conventionally feminine way. And so anything that the First Lady can do to not challenge or surprise us, but simply to serve as a helpful, you know, partner to her mate is really what we expect for the First Lady. Now, some viewers are going to want to be able to, if we're expected to listen to the First Lady, they're going to want to be able to respect her in terms of an established professional resume. But I think in general, because the job of First Ladies is really to be a partner to their spouse, as long as they do that job well, their speech tends to be evaluated favorably. But I did think that the contrast between assigning Ann Romney the theme of love and assigning Chris Christie the theme of respect really is more of a subtle indicator of the gendered expectations that were playing out last night. The men get to talk about respect, and the women get to talk about love and relationships.
Mm. Do we still have a fear of outspoken, politically active women?
We do, absolutely. And all of these expectations that I've been talking about in terms of how we hold it, what we have for our U.S. presidents, makes it doubly hard for women to step into that presidential role. 4 years ago, when both Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton were in presidential positions and kind of running their races, we did not hear very much from their spouses. Their spouses were kept in the background. And that's because it disrupts our expectations of leadership too much. And so at least in the realm of the presidency, women continue to be held up to a different standard than male candidates do when it comes to whether or not they would make a quote-unquote good or effective president.
We're talking about Ann Romney, her address last night. This hour of the program, 800-486-8655 is our number. And we go to Daniel in Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, good morning, folks. I'm actually an undecided voter, and nor did I think Ann Romney's speech last night was going to make me vote for Mitt Romney or not. I voted for Obama in the last campaign, but I'm a little frustrated in some areas. I kind of thought it was too scripted. I know all speeches are scripted, but it sounded, even when it came to the ladies part of it, the woman, the mother, it almost sounded like a Procter & Gamble commercial at the Olympics. I would have died to be able to read a speech that she just did some notes on and handed to a speechwriter and said, I wanted to talk about this. Meaning if her husband was loved or there wasn't this gender gap or this, that, or the other thing, and heard what she really had to say. And that's about it.
Okay, thank you for the call, Daniel.
You know, it's true. There's always this question that people have about this skepticism people have about speechwriters or people who help political figures prepare their speeches as if it's somehow less genuine. However, really good speechwriters, if they're very good at their job, what they try to do is emulate the speaker's personality, the speaker's natural tone of speaking, because that's when the speech is going to be delivered most effectively, when it's closest to their personal style. I did see one moment that was unscripted last night in the speech, according to one of the reporters who was there, said that Ann Romney's little shout-out, "I love you, women," wasn't in the script. And so I do think that she was attempting to really make a connection with the audience there in the room, and not just, you know, delivering the speech off the teleprompter to the televised audience.
Let's listen to this, because I think there are valid questions as to whether or not this was as subtle as it perhaps needed to be. It's obvious that the Republicans do have a very large gender gap here, and this part of the speech was scripted carefully, with the exception of what you just said, to address that issue. Let's listen to it, and I want to know what you think about it.
Sometimes I think that late at night, if we were all silent for just a few moments and listened carefully, we could hear a collective sigh from the moms and dads across America who made it through another day, and know that they'll make it through another one tomorrow. But in the end of that day moment, they just aren't sure how. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear the women sighing a little bit more than the men. It's how it is, isn't it? It's the moms who have always had to work a little harder to make everything right. It's the moms of this nation, single, married, widowed, who really hold this country together. We're the mothers. We're the wives. We're the grandmothers. We're the big sisters. We're the little sisters, and we are the daughters. You know it's true, don't you?
Your response to that?
I was surprised by that section of the speech because, I mean, clearly, as you've already mentioned, this was an attempt to reach out to the demographic that's been alienated by the statements of Republicans like Todd Akin and others. And Romney, Ann Romney, was attempting to demonstrate that she gets it. She gets the struggles of everyday women. What I was surprised about was the fact that journalists didn't make more of that particular section of the speech, because in some ways it almost sounded like Ann Romney was attempting to divert attention from the so-called war on women by launching a preemptive strike against dads, which
yes.
is a very
yes.
odd move in a speech like this. But interestingly, what garnered more attention was the way in which Ann Romney successfully demonstrated that there's more to her than, you know, mansions and show horses. So that's sort of what the journalists tended to focus on. But I'm interested in the, you know, today and tomorrow, as people really begin to break down the text of the speech, if that will jump out and say, you know, it's fine to empathize with the struggles of women, but why was it necessary to say that they work hardest and, you know, their life is more challenging.
They hold it all together, essentially, she was saying. They're the glue. They hold it all together.
Right. And I do, I mean, I think that, you know, in fairness to Romney, there are lots of women who feel like that in their everyday lives. And so it is likely to resonate with that audience. And perhaps, you know, those who are in charge of the speech just realize that Mitt Romney is not likely to lose the white male vote. They're not going to be so, you know, surprised by what Ann Romney said in that paragraph, that it would change their feelings about Mitt Romney. So they rolled the dice and hoped that they could pull in a few undecided women.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about Ann Romney's speech last night before the Republican National Convention and how successful it was, if she accomplished what she was supposed to do last night, humanize him and give us a better idea of who she is. And more broadly, we're looking at the role of the First Lady in history. Professor Karen Basby Anderson is our guest, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University, who has studied these kinds of issues very carefully and did look at Ann Romney's address quite carefully as well. More phone calls momentarily, 800-486-8655, or send an email, talk@WPR.org, or go to Facebook, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we'll talk about the teaching of history. Our guest approaches the putting together of a syllabus with a great deal of trepidation because it needs to be more than a contract with the student, and history perhaps is being taught with too much attention to dates and years, and what we need to do is look at the story. We know the ending, but what about the stories? Is that the way that we need to think about history? And also, we want to announce next hour the first selection of our Back to School Book Club, which we decided we would do. We're going to read, I hope all of you will read with us, some books that have been very important in American culture and history. So an announcement of what that first book will be, and meeting the professor who helped guide us through discussions of those books coming up, hour number two. Back to phone calls. We go next to Mark in Madison. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I was just wondering, I didn't hear Ann Romney say anything about Mitt being a dad and how he what kind of dad he was. Seems that he probably was out of the house working all the time, and she, not having to work herself, was able to take care of the kids all by herself. Comment?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that if you hear, for example, Michelle Obama talking about Barack Obama, one of the things that she talks about a lot is his work with his daughters and his interaction with them. I think that for Ann Romney, she's going with almost a more traditional view of the role of the American husband, so it wasn't as important for her to talk about that. Another interesting factor is, of course, the Romney's children are grown, and you know, they have grandchildren now. And so Barack Obama as a father is perhaps more relevant to his immediate context, whereas Mitt Romney, you know, it's been a few years since he's been active in fatherhood with young children.
Thank you, Mark, very much for the call. Jan in Ashland is next. Hi, Jan.
Hi, can you hear me, Kathleen?
Oh, Jan, yes.
I was insulted by it. I watched it, and I'm an independent voter, and I've raised three daughters by myself after their father left, and I worried constantly about how I was going to educate my children and how I was going to feed them and how I was going to make it on meager incomes until I was able to get a better job. And Ann Romney has never had to worry about that. When she was a girl, her parents had money. I don't think that she can actually relate personally. Yes, she knows that women are concerned about that, but I was insulted.
Have you felt that way about other presidential candidates' wives, Jan, who came from a lot of money or not?
Yeah, I think that Mrs. Reagan was one of the most insulting first ladies. I'm a historian, and I look back on where they lived their lives and the things that they said and how they can relate to people. I think Barbara Bush was insulting, too. I saw her in Menominee, and she didn't have time for women that were there at the dedication of the library. She was just too busy. I see Michelle Obama as being much, much more aware of what happens to women's lives because of where her mother was. And Barack Obama, the same thing, where his mother was, and the things that they went through, the struggles that they went through to educate their children and to get them to where they are today. All three of my daughters are college graduates. They've all been all over the world. They all have wonderful jobs. They wouldn't have been able to do it without the assistance of loans. I didn't take welfare. I worked.
Okay, what about somebody like Jackie Kennedy?
Kennedy wasn't so much that way, although I was aware that she was an aristocrat. But I really think that she put herself in a position where she didn't say, oh, you women, I understand you and I love you and I know that you hold it all together and that it's a struggle for you. Ann Romney has never had to do that struggle.
Okay, Karen.
I do think that that's a challenge for her. I mean, she has to work with the life story that she has to work with. So she has a limited number of ways to connect with voters who've had different, you know, experiences and opportunities than she's had. One thing that was a problem for her when Mitt Romney was running for governor and I'm interested to see if it will come up again after this speech, is the little tidbit about how they lived in that tiny apartment when he was going through graduate school and he propped a door up on sawhorses for their desk, and et cetera. The one fact that she included in some of her writing earlier but left out of the speech was that he put himself through college by selling off some stock that he'd been given in small increments. And so he was certainly on a smaller budget than what both he and Anne were used to before they got married. But it's not the same kind of struggling student experience that other people, you know, with whom she's trying to relate have been through. And so as pieces of that narrative come out, it will be interesting to see what people say. But bottom line, if you're predisposed to think charitably of Anne Romney and her husband and her story, then you're going to find a lot that you like in that story. And if you're predisposed to be wary of it, then you're going to resist it.
I think you're absolutely right. Isn't that the way we're seeing the world these days?
Yes, unfortunately.
It certainly is. Are there other speeches you're particularly looking forward to in the next couple of days that we need to pay attention to? Can you tell me in 15 seconds?
Well, I'm really interested to hear the candidate, Mitt Romney. I mean, this is his big chance to connect with the American people in ways he's been unable to. Even though it's a political commercial for the Republican Party, it's an opportunity for him to speak outside the context of a soundbite or a media or a political ad. So I'm interested to see if he can rise to the occasion and show the undecided voters what his supporters already like about him.
Mm-hmm. All three of them. No, there may be more than that. Just kidding. Professor, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate your analysis.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Professor Karen Vasby Anderson, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University. We also thank Peter Canellos, editorial page editor from the Boston Globe. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program.